Well, the struggle over Australia's inner cities in the late 60s and early 70s was divisive. State governments and private developers wanted to demolish terrace houses and cottages to build high-rise and freeways. Much of the resistance was based in the churches, and it's detailed in a new book, Trendyville, The Battle for Australia's Inner Cities. One of the co-authors is Renata Howe, distinguished historian and a clergy wife. Her husband, Brian Howe, was a Melbourne Methodist minister and Labor politician. Renata observes that while the inner cities are now the centres of secularism, not so long ago, they were the most religious parts of Australia.
Many of the churches which were built in the inner city in Melbourne dated back to the golden era of Victoria's history. So many of the gold diggers who came in the 50s and 60s to Victoria had a religious background, congregational, especially Methodist, and Church of England, Presbyterian, the whole gamut. And when they gold petered out in the goldfields towns, moved to the city, great suburban expansion in the inner city and the building of quite large churches.
But there's also a strong correlation, I would have thought, Renata, with post-war immigration and the growth of some inner city congregations. I mean, the days when Italians and Croats and Poles lived in the inner city and filled those Catholic churches.
They certainly did, and they took over some of the declining Protestant churches as well. So some of those big cathedral-type churches became alive again with ethnic congregations. So the Croatians moved into the Methodist Church in Clifton Hill. You had that pattern of the Catholic churches were bursting at the seams with especially Italian migrants. And of course, these groups were all settled in the inner city at that period, working in manufacturing industry of Melbourne.
Certainly in Sydney, certain Christian denominations would stamp their presence in a suburb by trying to have the highest bell tower.
Yes, getting a site on the hill, etc., was always quite a competition between churches.
How did the churches find themselves caught in this battle for the inner city?
Well, I think what's important to keep in mind is that at the same time we had this great theological revolution happening. It was an exciting time, really. The churches had been in decline in the inner city over the post-war period. But then came the theological revolution, I'd call it, a very exciting time, end of the 1960s, 1970s, where these declining churches were suddenly revitalized by a new group moving into the inner city. So that you got this, I hesitate to use the word, but global ecumenical theology emerging. Gibson Winter in America wrote The Suburban Captivity of the Church, pointing out that the churches were too much focused on suburbs and not enough on cities and inner city problems. Harvey Cox's Secular City, George MacLeod's Only One Way Left. These books were being eagerly read in Melbourne and Sydney and other Australian cities by theological students and church members, and they had a great influence.
Yes, interesting. It's the 50th anniversary this year of Harvey Cox's book, The Secular City, and not a book that the outsider would think advocates secularism, but more a book, I think, advocating the churches go out and be part of the secular world and spread their message in those sort of secular environs.
That's right. Those books were all about the challenge of the city, and especially the inner cities. It was a time of great turbulence in cities, especially in America. You're starting to have the civil rights movement moving from the south to the north. In Britain, there was a lot of unrest in many of the inner city areas, people wanting better housing and so on. So it was a time of great change in the inner city and at the same time of great theological challenge.
To what extent, Renata, in the inner cities was there a crossover between church activism and political parties? I think in your case it's particularly so because listeners, particularly in Melbourne, will know your husband Brian Howe became a federal Labor MP and ultimately deputy prime minister. So was that a common thing, joint church politics involvement?
Yes, the new theology recognised the importance of power. So there was no shying away that political power was important if you were going to change the social situation in many inner city areas. Yes, I think especially in Melbourne, out of the urban protest movements of the 60s and 70s, we had a whole generation of politicians who moved into, especially the Labor Party, which of course dominated in the inner city but had become very moribund and run down, and was revitalised by these new activists who had moved and settled in the inner city and were challenging the changes that were taking place.
Give us an encapsulation of what was known, Renata, as urban theology or the theology of the city.
Well, it was determined to make a difference. It was not going to be armchair theology by any means. It wanted to have achievements in changing the city. There was a great deal of emphasis on risk-taking. It was ecumenical, and I think that's very important, that nearly all these experiments that came between the churches were ecumenical in this period. And they also, as I've pointed out, were prepared to look at the importance of power and political activism.
Well, I mean, you've talked there about an element of unity, but in the tensions that you discuss in your book, Trendyville, did those tensions manifest themselves in church congregations? I mean, i.e. the sort of liberal professionals versus the more traditional working class, both of them nearly all was part of the broad Labor Party family. But were those tensions that you talk about in the book there in congregations?
Yes, I'm sure in many congregations there was a tension between the old Australian working class and the new radicals who were moving in. Often it was a creative tension, often it was more bitter, but certainly there was some tension there.
And we can't leave this conversation without a bit of Sydney-Melbourne rivalry, or at least comparison. You have this wonderful line where you refer to the secular liberationist flavour of Sydney's inner city activists versus the liberal Protestant culture of Melbourne's activism. I mean, that's a very astute observation. Tell us about that.
Well, it's perhaps an exaggeration, but I would like to point out that there really were important developments in Sydney as well. Drew Eland had studied at the Ecumenical Institute in Chicago and brought those same ideas back to the South Sydney Parish. And you also, of course, had the Wayside Chapel at King's Cross, which was very important at that time. But the churches were so important around the inner city in Melbourne. I think the different geography of Sydney probably had an influence there.
And also a little bit more of the materialist and hedonist culture, I suspect, in Sydney.
Yes, that's certainly true. There was a different culture in Sydney than in Melbourne. That certainly was influential in determining the different approaches in the two cities. Also, of course, in Sydney, the movement was much more confrontational and violent than in Melbourne. And in Melbourne, of course, we were mainly fighting the state statutory authorities like the Housing Commission, the Board of Works and the freeways body. But in Sydney, it was a real confrontation with private developers that felt very, very tense and very dangerous at times. So it was a different atmosphere in the two cities, and the churches, I think, reacted in a different way.
You can't beat the gentility of Melbourne. Renata Howe is a historian. She was for a long time at Deakin University. Renata is one of the co-authors of the book Trendyville, The Battle for Australia's Inner Cities. She herself was a participant in much of that activism. Renata, I thank you very much for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.